We were teased with the whole question of stuff yesterday. I'm not sure that
yes.
I'm not sure that we've resolved all our concerns and difficulties. Chairman and committee, if possible, need to attend this meeting. Then you'll come. Yes.
Would you allow me to acknowledge something? After we discussed, and I don't think that we should cover the same terrain, but after we discussed at the top of page 37 yesterday, the matter of the CEO appointing a senior member of staff in his or her place, and in the event the CEO's action for a longer period, and I asked longer than what, etc. I checked that at ICASA, and all of this is taken from ICASA, which I'm sure Hank and Ananda were duly polite to say. Please never think that I approve of the ICASA and communications laws as they can. Each one of them was a pitched battle. But I do see where you got that from. I still think it would be different. But I thought I would just like to acknowledge that. And then the only further thing that arose is to what degree one has to create the legal power to administer, essentially. I felt it wasn't necessary, since the other, the Chapter 9 bodies run huge administrations without any detailed legislative provisions. But ICASA does have sections 14, for the appointment of experts, it has its own provision saying the authority may appoint as many experts as may be necessary, with a view to assisting the authority in the performance of functions, which is where it ought to be. And then it just has the one sub-clause, which was a matter of extreme contention at the time, saying where an expert, which also wants to appoint, is not a citizen or a permanent resident, the minister must approve the appointment, which is a load of nonsense, of course, and that's where the fight about that in that particular committee. But the fact is that ICASA is allowed to appoint its experts, and these would be the expensive people that some of us worry about, and no limitation is placed there on. They obviously have to work within their budget. Financing and funding by the authority just has normal provisions about money being appropriated by Parliament, that the CEO is under Section 36 of the PFMA, the accounting officer, and so forth. All of that, I think we have captured, have we not? Yes. But I don't think we should backtrack.
My question to all of you then, is there any other outstanding matters with regard to clause 46 that we need to discuss?
Yes, if it's anything before. My query is with regard to subclause 5.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that the way it says that in the society is covered in terms of sections 1 and 2, with respect to the payment of salaries, which is the regulator and the contract with the means of finance. Now, I think that is proper that the regulator consults with the means of finance and not with the means of finance, considering that we have agreed that the payment has to be is no longer going to be Parliament that is going to determine, but it's going to be the Minister, having consulted with the Minister of Finance. So it's proper that the regulator doesn't consult the Minister, rather the other Minister, and his own demand comes from the other Minister.
And so I'm confident, in fact, it would be improper to allow the minister to determine these things. I mean, this is a fairly standard thing. It's the reason why the Minister of Finance gets consulted is because he holds the purse and he knows what's available. And he's the one that we have to fight us in order to get what they want. But the other provision dealt with the pay of the regulator itself. These are their staff. No, it's entirely across the board.
Well, I get that 45.1 would occur first. And once that occurs, as part of that consultation, 45.1 is going to make sense. The question of the regulator's authority in 46.5 would probably also be discussed. And they would also come to some of
it. Can you say in both? That is this clause and that clause and the second minister?
Yes, as Ms. Mike points out, the Minister of Finance is the first string.
In terms of budget vote check. It is sometimes necessary to bring the Minister for the Department on set. That is responsible. Of course, you can do it to the Minister of Finance, but then you need to get the justice around it. When the leader of the expenditure process, you realize that it's easy for this year to lost in the process of it. Another thing that I wanted to just indicate is 46.1. It says that the secretary of the regulator and such other officers and employees, for consistency, can't we actually label the secretary, the chief executive officer, right? Take it to another position we're referring to.
No, that's coming out.
It's not in the detail, okay. I'll probably not hear my question. Thank you. Okay.
You've all looked at 26 sub 7. Eh?
The one we don't like, the regulator shouldn't have to consult anybody for the employment of people with special knowledge. They should be hired up front. And that's why we are so unhappy with the idea of public sector rates, wages. This regulator won't need people with special expertise on a temporary basis or for a particular matter. It needs to employ them upfront. But at least this is there. This is a second or third prize.
Which minister is responsible for the implementation of the promotion of access to information act?
Well,
I continue not to understand why we want to.
At an admin level.
An admin level. Is this how we operate here?
Yes, at an admin level.
And introducing a statutory point which has been aligned to a particular ministry. Can simply go straight whenever I want money now, and simply go straight to the trader without any interaction with the minister.
It doesn't mean they're going to get it even if they go to Treasury. Treasury may turn them down.
And then who will they have to tell them?
I don't know. You mustn't assume that because they go to Treasury, that means they're just going to get the pot of gold.
No, no, what I'm saying is that my understanding is that the minister, they meet somewhere to ask them for their visit from Treasury. And when they do that, they take into account all the institutions that fall within the area of operation.
Yeah, that's where the problem lies, because now you're saying people like the public protectors get in line. And
so when they come to us, saying that they have not visited now and they are not able to perform their visit, we then call the president, don't we?
You know, through chapter 9 review, there's a whole section on the disparities in how their budget processes actually work. And we express the view that there ought to be a uniform one, and it ought to work in a certain way. But the present situation with chapter 9 is that some go and defend their budgetary requirements directly with Treasury. Others do so through their, what should not be their line ministry, but is their line ministry. So there's a whole disparity of ways in which this happens, and this won't be any different. But you will remember from the Justice Budget, it has the category for the Human Rights Commission and the public sector. It sits for the books that it sits in the Justice Budget, and the others, the IEC sits on them with that. And that we think ought to change. Our recommendation is that all of their budgets should be voted under Parliament's own budget vote. That's the recommendation in the chapter 9 review. But that has not yet been implemented, although we took a resolution to the House.
Which means that they would have to then draw up budgets.
Yes, and interact directly with us then.
Mm-hmm.
But Chair, I suggest that we shouldn't spend so much time on this matter. And do you and Ananda wish to, do they not wish to respond anyway to the Honourable Wollemista?
I think we've got it.
It looks like to me therefore the matter is not yet settled because there are inconsistencies as the team has pointed out.
Yes,
it is a matter that we need to be attended to.
And are you also saying, Smith, that there will be no matters that may arise whereby the regulation will require expenses on a temporary basis? I mean, what is the general from time to time has to go out and employ forensics experts?
I said that we're just very keen that they should be in a position to hire upfront and full time real expertise.
And he sits and twiddles his thumbs.
No, it's like twiddling his thumbs. There's a dire need out there to create secure computer networks and secure practices under which our private information is safe. All of that banks are currently unregulated.
To walk out here. Is the Minister of Justice responsible for the implementation of this act?
Yeah.
And yet whether minds that are required to ensure the proper implementation of the act, he doesn't have to be consulted. I don't think that is proper. You're cooperating your spending.
No. I think this is an important point, so I don't feel
I think it's a matter that needs to be looked into. Can you ask the officials to go and look at liability?
No, I think it's not for them, it's for us. You and me to decide. I'd rather not leave it to them. I'd rather we took the
decision. And especially looking at portability around this, because you know sometimes we put provisions within legislation that are not really making it easy for institutions to manage to work. And one of it would be something like that. We just need to be sure that when it comes to budget board processes, this institution is what comes.
She's waiting for you to come so that you could leave. No, I'm joking. The question before us, Mr. Jeffrey, is in 46 sub 7. And the question is, why does the regulator have to consult with the Minister of Finance and not the Minister of Justice?
About setting up their...
Don't
functions of the chief executive officer. Clause 47 is
We did actually read through that clause. We started to go through that clause yesterday, Chair, and then we went back to 46. So I think it really remains for the committee members to indicate whether they are satisfied with the provision as it stands at the moment. And then on clause 48, Chair. Committee self-regulator, so the unit made for the establishment of committees by the regulator to assist it in exercising its functions. I think that provision is straightforward, Chair. I don't think there's anything that we really need to point out to you. And then in clause 49 we have the establishment of an enforcement committee. That will be primarily responsible for considering certain matters and then making recommendations to the regulator regarding the proposed decisions that the regulator should take in, for example, a case where the regulator receives and has investigated a complaint. Now, clause 49 then makes provision for the establishment of the enforcement committee with a judge or an attorney or a magistrate as chairperson of the regulator, and then also at least one member of the regulator should also serve on this enforcement committee. The chairperson of the enforcement committee will then be a legally qualified person to be appointed by the regulator in consultation with the Chief Justice and the Minister. And step 3 indicates to us that the chairperson will be responsible to manage the work of the enforcement committee, like hearings of the enforcement committee. 4A just indicates to us that if the member who participated in the activities of the enforcement committee, they did not take part in the final decision process in the regulator itself. It's just a fit and proper requirement then also in 4B. That brings us to the very short provision of clause 50, which gives us a general indication of the functions of the enforcement committee. First of all, it must consider all matters referred to by the regulator in terms of section 96, at this stage, capital A, renumbering of trains, or the deprivation of access to information, and then make findings to inspect thereof, and then may make recommendation to the regulator necessary to any action that should be taken against the responsible party in terms of the act, or an information officer or head of a private body as occasionally in terms of the promotion of access to information act.
That's this is
Clause
50
of
the bill, sir. And I think it might be useful to indicate two things to the members. We created an enforcement committee for a number of reasons, but one of them legal, in order to be quite sure that we observed all proper process, especially in view of a judgment that the Constitutional Court handed down in Islamic Unity. Convention versus the Second Islamic Union case. When the complainants were unhappy that a regulator, which was a precursor of ICASA, was doing both the investigating and the final adjudication, and ruled that everything was proper in the case of ICASA, partially because the final recommendation of a sanction in respect of broadcasted or telecoms operators in that case, the recommendation was made by the equivalent of an enforcement committee, which then sent that recommendation to the full ICASA, the full authority, in this case the 5 members of the regulator, who take the final decision. So it was from that point of view desirable to have a separate enforcement committee. But another reason why it is desirable to have this kind of final legally qualified body is that we've given the information regulator powers not only in respect of this act, the protection of personal information, but also in respect of FIRE. done some bold and dramatic things. Some of them things that have long been asked for by our society. We all know that there is a problem with access to information. There is, for example, the phenomenon of leave refusals, where especially government departments simply don't respond to requests. And by placing FIRA in certain respects under this regulator, we hope that that situation is going to improve radically. Because we'll see that this regulator works with various tools. One of them is to do something called an assessment. An assessment is where you go and inspect whether a processor of product information is processing properly, safely, securely, and with due observation of the privacy of people. But the tool of assessment will now also be able to be used in respect of the access to information practices of both public bodies and private bodies. And I think that is critically going to improve our situation in respect of access to information. The regulator will also have certain other powers. For example, if you are dissatisfied with a decision of the information officer at any body, if they turn you down, they won't give the information, you will now be able to go inter alia to the regulator, who will be able to make either recommendations or decisions. You'll see when we get to the very end, because we've made some amendments and additions to FIRA itself. And so we hope that this information regulator will do, amongst other things, what we also recommend in the Chapter 9 review. It's recommended also in Mr. Manuel's plan. He expresses support for the idea that an information regulator should be able to assist people when they wish to access information. And the only difference between the Honourable's proposal and my proposal is whether the final decision of the regulator will be binding. But we'll get to that towards the end of that. But rather, Chair, I thought, rather than plotting the clauses without seeing the big picture, that is what we're doing. We're creating the regulator with the 5 members. It will have various committees and divisions, but there will also be this enforcement committee, and its task is to sit on matters arising both out of the PPI and out of the FIRA. So, I mean, this is a very important bill, it is anyway, in respect of private information, but inasmuch as it now also gets jurisdiction over FIRA, it becomes all the more important.
All right, thank you. A couple of questions, Mr. Trey, the enforcement committee structure. All right. Secondly, you're providing for the appointment of a judge in consultation with Chief Justice and Minister. How will you get around the Concord judgment of the use of judges on these bodies?
Because this too is, and it's not new. We've done this in various other laws for
years.
Yeah. I think if we all face with the clause of the agreement, the recommendation would be that even if you're not in active service.
You see, if you're not in active service, then it might be different. But when you're in active service,
well, God, I mean, it's even debatable with regard to
the magistrate.
Well, no, your active service issue. Because even if you're not active service anymore, you can be called to the police in a certain way.
The life are there to help us with assorted tasks. Yeah.
No, I think what I'll do is I'll speak to them. Okay, this advice. Thank you,
Chair. What comments, sir?
I understand your question though, Chair. That's why you asked them how full-time they would be. That is going to depend on the number of issues referred to them.
No, there's an in-principle problem with the Concord with if you don't want to start.
Okay. No, I don't know in this case. I think it's his judgment.
That's one of them. There's another one.
That was respect with a different matter. That
yes, but the principle. Yes. But I would have to dig it.
That these two clauses are fine and that we move on.
Alright. Unless anyone has other questions?
No. Well, it is from outside, technically it might be more appropriate. And we will take that when we get to clause 96A, being cert clause 50 under 96A as a 96B, just for purposes of gathering at this point. Yes, Chair. Recommendation would be to remove this clause and insert this under 96A.
Sorry, which one, Mr.?
Clause 50, the current clause 50.
Clause 50, you want to be moved to 96?
Yes, Chair. It will be a 96.
Tell us why.
Okay, because the important issue here relates to the establishment of the enforcement committee and also the establishment as part of the ball in the sections, the establishment. But where it comes to functions, and it is priority.
All right. Okay. All right. Meetings of regulators?
It's standard stuff of us. Forums and authorities.
My name is Option.
Yes, Madam Jackass, forgive me.
The majority of the members of the Victorian Association, I think it's from often, it might actually be discussed when it comes to trying to understand what majority means. But then, if it's about the majority in terms of the numbers that is part of the members at a particular point, we can sometimes have only two members present. That's it.
What is wrong?
It's all about two.
In the ANC, it's wrong.
In the process of this, sometimes happens. I got here in front of me the Commission on Gender Equality.
Yes.
There was a time when they
Then the dispute could be, I think the point is correct, there's a lack of clarity as to
Is it the existing members, the one person has resigned or passed away or something, and that hasn't been, well, if they pass away, meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, they pass away tonight. You know, then there's apparent the confusion as to whether, okay, we're now in four, or, you know, is, well, I suppose two is still not a majority of four. But anyway, it's just, I think maybe the way around it would be three members of the regulator should
be actually split.
Yeah. Then it's clear, if you're happy with that. But I'm not given the decisions of, the importance of the decisions of the regulator. I'm not comfortable with allowing too small a group to take those decisions.
I can start to follow, but my worry is that when you run an institution, remember you hire staff, the office is running on a day-to-day basis, and then there's this area of members that is not talking for the house, but people are coming on to get into work, they need decisions to be made at that level. It then takes an institution to think about.
Temporarily.
It depends on how long temporarily will be. Sometimes temporarily becomes a year.
I don't think one parliament will take a year to appoint one or two members of this committee or regulator.
It does happen, and case of the Gender Commission is a good example of that. I mean, I think parliament was a national assembly, it's not the whole of parliament.
Given the body you're talking about, it probably was a good thing.
but I think my worry, my difficulty is it's not just administrative decisions. The regulator is taking decisions against people. Government bodies, private bodies, deciding for individuals, against them, deciding against individuals, whatever. I think it needs, you can't just have one person doing that. So I think that in spite of the concerns raised, the National Assembly has to monitor that vacancies are filled.
Well, even two people, it'd still be uncomfortable.
Yeah. I think it is better that the quorum is three.
Mr. Sivanini, and then Ms. Smith.
Yeah, are we saying that there would be no stage where there would only two people?
I think what Mr. Jeffrey is saying, given our experience with the Gender Commission, it is now our responsibility to ensure that at all times the regulator has its full complement, at least four, that would need a quorum of three. So that becomes now our responsibility, yours and mine.
Okay.
Okay, they can go down to three, but they
will
be happy
to join. So if one falls sick,
and just to emphasize, because the Chapter 9 or the Gender Commission, Human Rights Commission, effectively make recommendations. So if they decide that if they make a finding that one of their recent ones, the Human Rights Commission, that the Democratic Alliance member of Cape Town violated human rights. Decision which had real material consequences on the effect.
Anything else?
If you look at footnote 82, Mr. Dupree and Ms. Lowe ask whether we ought not to have a provision stating if the chairperson is absent from a meeting, the member present shall elect one of the number to preside at that meeting. And I think that is a good idea, and I'm sure we all do. Can we put it in?
Are you happy with that? Okay.
To your member that part of her concerns, I think, will be addressed in any event to the extent that you have your CEO who is the head of administration. So at least your administration and your personnel will be able to function.
Sure.
If then maybe a crisis would bring up your members.
Sure.
But you have the, so at least part of the concern will be.
Yes, he or she is not doing the job.
Any got to actually on a regular basis get approval of some of the whatever operations that we embarking on. And if the members are not in position to constitute the quorum, it will then therefore make it difficult for them to proceed with business. Otherwise this will actually end up being an unapproved spending.
Okay. Let's see how it works. Anything else on the 51? No. From 52. Clause 52?
Sorry, sir, I heard funds.
Funds?
I heard funds.
No, I said funds. Oh, sorry. Did that sound like funds?
Mr. Chair, yes. I think the provision also is quite straightforward. We would just like to point out under 52.1b, we will just have to, or we're just knocking this one out for ourselves, depending on final decisions. Yeah, that's related.
So say again.
B,
what about B?
We have to just note that this provision might fall away.
Why?
Depending on.
Basically, this is a provision. There's a provision in the bill which the technical committee put in, allowing the a process that allowing notification fees to be charged, which is the case in
so Rossini doesn't want fees.
He doesn't want fees. But Chair, the issue, as you know, of notification to the regulator is an issue which we want to make proposals on. And it then may affect the issue of whether you can charge fees or not. This provision was just an enabling provision. It wasn't to say that fees will be charged, can be charged, but that there would be a process whereby, I think involving the minister and the regulator and the search, an enabling provision. Because we were interested in the British example where the British regulator raises some of its funds through notification fees. So when you notify it to a particular type of entity, you have to then pay them. But because the whole notification issue is into making proposals on the week, which we'll get to on the next page, next few pages, maybe we can just come back to this one.
All right, let's do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Clause 53 then is the protection of the regulator provision. The remainder of the clauses have been omitted there and redrafted.
Can you just say that the are there no
seats
on the CEO?
Yes, they are. 46.2. 46.2 must come out. You've repeated it. Just look at 46.2.
Right? Yes, yes, that is something that we will check. Okay, Chair, maybe just for guidance or for clarity purposes, you would rather then refer that CEO provision to remain in
Well, either comes out where you're looking at now, or in 46.2, you need to decide where it comes out.
Thank you, too.
Yeah, I would suggest that we leave it up to the masters to look at what is done elsewhere. I mean, it makes sense if you've got a section dealing with what the CEO does, but that's 47.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about the fact that the 52.3. That the CEO is the accounting officer. But rather than pass aside and let's look at what the precedents are, I mean, the principle is we read the CEO as the accounting officer. The question of whether that goes under the fund section
or elsewhere,
or
okay,
whether it goes under the powers duty.
For a moment there, I'm in some studio. Okay, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That brings us to clause 3, protection of regulated clause.
Okay.
And 54, duty of
confidentiality.
Why do you want to discuss it?
That's it.
Yes.
But I think
Chair,
the
Chair needs to remain as
the
We'll decide later as
have related to whatever they are. It doesn't mean we're approving it.
You see, I'm still on the same position as Mario on this matter. But this is the chapter 9 all have such a provision, and on that basis, I thought this can be certain as the same.
Mr. Chair, are there any limitations of confidentiality provision in the we are presented with merely to clarify the position that that area of confidentiality will remain on a person or my effective even if the person do not work for the regulatory anymore or at least the regulator.
Oh, is it? Okay. All right.
Okay. For the information officer, chair, those positions are straightforward. I don't think there's anything that I really need to highlight. That's the position of the duties and responsibilities of the information officer, 55 and 56, the designation and delegation of the information officer. And then we reach chapter 6, Mr. Chair, the notification and prior authorization chapter. Divided into two parts, first part notification and second part prior authorization. And I think it would be appropriate for me maybe to just stop here with your permission, Chair.
All right. Well, this was the thing we were discussing last night. Okay, I want to make it. All right. There's two parts. The notification part, where we did discuss with the first briefing that that Sabria gave last term, that responsible parties must notify the regulator before they start processing, and then the details of what they give, and then the regulator under 59 has the power to exempt certain categories of information. And then the teacher's gave this story, and then if you don't notify, you've committed a criminal offence. And then part B is that you need prior authorization for a particular kind of processing, which is in clause 62. It's basically the bank accounts. Information on criminal behavior or on unlawful or conduct of the parties, credit reporting, and transferring special information. So those, if you process, you need prior authorization. So that's the that is basically what's here. Now the issue basically is the question around, I mean, we raised it last time, although the regulator can exempt categories, we're processing information, personal information all the time. And there was the example given of Rask, the committee secretary for asked the committee secretary for a list of members' phone numbers, and he's processing, and if the regulator hasn't got around to exempting that category, he's liable for prosecution because he didn't notify the regulator. And I think the issue that has been raised with the EU is around the necessity of notification. So that's what we discussed last time with myself particularly arguing that I didn't think general notification was necessary. It's quite an onerous burden on everybody. One of the things we want to do is to reduce the burden on the regulator to enable it to function properly. So the proposal basically is that the general requirement of notification should come out. However, the category listed under clause 62 requiring prior authorization, and obviously to get that prior authorization you need to apply and effectively notify, that those remain. So basically the proposal is the general processing of information then notification that you are processing information
is necessary. However, the special categories that you require prior authorization for that remains. So the regulator is aware and in fact has to give permission for that. The issue was then linked to the question, and Ms. Smuts can speak more on this, of the fire manuals. There are currently, as far as I understand it, and I speak under correction, in terms of the Promotion of Access to Information Act, all the public bodies have to submit manuals to the Human Rights Commission, as well as certain sections of the private sector, and the minister has exempted the smaller or large number. I think the bigger companies have to, or not, if they do, they currently do. Those manuals then, and there's no requirement that if the manual is updated, that it has to be resubmitted. But from what we understand from the Human Rights Commission is that those manuals are going there and being placed in a basement. I think there's a little bit of concern that when the ministerial exemption lapses or doesn't get renewed, that there may be space problems about where to put these manuals. They're hard copies. And it would really appear, I don't want to sort of misquote the Human Rights Commission, but it would really appear as though nobody is even looking at them. There's no capacity to do that. I mean, I think the Human Rights Commission have one person. Now, and that's really an issue that could be changed. So the proposal was that, and these two clauses are linked, that effectively in the section of PIA, which details what you must put into the manual, the detail of what some of the detail around what would have been in the notification that was given to the regulator under 58 is included under requirements for PIA manual. But that you do not have to send this manual to anyone. You have to have the manual available. You must do the manual with these details about processing of personal information as well. You must have it available to members of the public to look at or to copy at their own cost, or to get a copy at their own cost. And if you have a website, you must place the manual on website. And that be the sole requirement. So this issue of having to submit hard copies of the manual to a basement where nobody is going to look at them and the fish moths are just going to eat them is really a waste of time and money. So it was those two things linked together. I don't know if Ms. Smuts wants to then add.
Now quite a big change we've arrived at. But we support this approach. We will no longer require absolutely everybody who processes information to notify the regulator that they process information. And here are the things that they, as Bill said, here are the things that they were required to notify to the regulator. Such things as the name and address, the purpose of the processing, description of categories, the recipient or categories of recipients, planned transborder flows, a general description allowing a preliminary assessment of the suitability of the information security measures to be implemented by the responsible party to ensure the confidentiality, integrity and availability of information which is to be processed. Now, we think it is a good idea to drop the entire notification requirement in the interest of having less red tape. It was, when we started working on this bill, already a trend in Europe, as we were advised in the submission by MIH. The trend and the thinking was that notification is burdensome and not really necessary. And the EU has now arrived at the point where they are abandoning notification. We think in South Africa it's useful to spare businesses and government departments a step, to spare them some red tape, and that we can safely abandon the idea of notification, save in the case, as Mr. Jeffrey has described, save in the case of prior authorization, the certain kind of difficult processing, and those would be cases where people are processing you. unique identifiers, including your bank accounts and your financial information, including cases where criminal behavior is to be processed, or the special personal information of both adults and children. So all of the categories where there is reason to be a little worried will indeed have to be notified to the regulator, because the regulator will have to give prior authorization before they even start processing. And that is the safety net. Now, if we go to abandon the requirement for notification, it makes a lot of sense to amend a little bit the manuals that people have to compile and acquire. It was anyway the case in our notification provision that you either had to notify the regulator, or if you already lodged a prior manual, then you were free. You didn't have to notify. But it seems to us now what we should do is simply expand. The prior manual provisions are to be found in prior sections 14 and 51. 14 is for government departments, 51 is for the private sector. And the prior manual requires such things as where you are, who you are, your address, and the latest notice regarding categories of records of the body available without you having to request. Now, we think we should simply add to that manual requirement by amending the prior provisions. These notification requirements presently sitting in 58. Namely, a general description of your security measures, how you're going to ensure the confidentiality, integrity, availability of information. Maybe we put some of those things into the prior manual requirements, and we no longer require the prior manuals, as the Honourable Terry has said, to be sent in hard copy to the poor Human Rights Commission, which has vaults and basements groaning under manual, which no one reads.
Before I recognize you, are you proposing that we actually amend the prior? Yes.
The back of the bill and the schedules, we are already amending prior to a considerable extent, and this would be simply yet one more further amendment.
Yeah.
My comment is going to support also the input made by to say that indeed what is problematic what the user manual like it has not articulated by the option that I think the idea of not having this manual sense to the South African Human Rights Commission anymore is good. The establishment should actually have the manuals in-house in hard copy electronically. But at the same time, I think what would be most important would be to also in the existence and change in terms of the provisions of the manual, then the establishment must notify the information of the regulator. About just amendment, they are no longer submitting a full document.
Changes
to, yes, what is known should actually be registered with the regulator. And that could be part of what we see the amendment to the
five. We need to think about it. Sure,
that
sounds good.
Mr. Link,
and then Mr.
Chippy. Thank you, Chair. There seem to be two distinct issues that we need to address in this regard. The first is purely the notification requirement, and the second is the issue of prior authorization and the notification that must be offered in that regard. Now, the European Union have looked at what they call impact assessments in determining where there's a necessity for a prior authorization. So I absolutely agree that we need to streamline and make as easy as possible the issues of notification. So what I have in mind, and I am thinking on the run of it now, I've already indicated to this committee that I think that it would be a good idea that we also look to the very technologies, creative uses, and use the advantages that they have as well. So from that perspective, it would seem to me to be a good idea that one of the purposes of notification is for consumers to actually know that there has been a notification and that information has been provided to the regulator in the case of Pride to the Human Rights Commission at the moment. That was one of the busy purposes, and it was observed in the breach rather than some of the observance at the end of the day. But what I think would be valuable is that the regulator is obliged to actually publish on the website so that it's easily accessible. Parties that have been have notified that they are compliant. And the other thing then is that, turning now to the question of impact assessments, and I'm not too sure that we want to go that route, but I think there's a lot of value in looking at what the European Union are doing. And that is to say, if the sensitive information or information which is going to be communicated transborder, that immediately those are factors that have to be taken into account in advising the regulator that that is the type of processing that will be carried out, and that the regulator then obviously is advised that there should be some form of prior authorization around that information. But the work must be done at the level of the organization itself. And one of the things that I would suggest is that we should look at not just placing the responsible party being the organization as being responsible for ensuring that this information is provided to the regulator, but that the information officer, and if that information officer happens by default to be the CEO, is personally responsible to ensure that this notification, the proper notification, particularly where sensitive information is going to be processed, is provided to the regulator. That provides, and I see it, just a normal notification that this is the party, and we know that we're dealing with this party, they have reported to the regulator that would assist in protecting consumers as to who they're dealing with. But it also provides the protection that is important around the security measures and the measures that are required around the actual processing where sensitive information, as Honourable Jeffrey and Honourable Smith have indicated, or where it is transborder information that is being processed. So I think we have to place that responsibility somewhere. And my view is that must be the information officer. You know, at the moment, from a practical perspective, what is happening in the fire is that we see the information officers, and even with the organisations, I've just been dealing with an organisation in the last 2 months, and I sat in a workshop and I said, and they're large, well-known South African organisation, and I said, you know, going through your website, I see that so-and-so is the information officer, and so-and-so happened to be in that meeting, and he said, oh, am I? And this is a large organisation. So, you know, we need to ensure that the responsibility of information officers is reinforced in our legislation, that this just isn't something that is delegated to somebody who doesn't have any work to do and doesn't know what they're doing. We need the right people to be able to deal with information. It's a critically important part of this information revolution that we start getting the right people dealing with this. So that is just in the consideration of the committee. I ask them to just look at the distinction between notification for the purposes of dealing, or just knowing, having people know that you are dealing with information correctly and that you're complying with the legislation, and notification for the purposes of how we deal with prior authorization to sensitive information, whatever name we might put to that information, and information that might be subject to cross-border plus. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Argue with that.
Right,
this when it comes to the fact that conservation may be the members of the fire already that function of receiving the manual was a function being given to the regulator. So it's not something that. But look, with Mr. Heng's suggestion, I'm not quite sure. You know, the problem of what we're trying to avoid is, I agree with the issue of additional requirements on the information officers, either in clause 55 of this bill or the relevant sections of PIA and responsibilities given to information officers. But I'm just not clear about the suggestion of information to processing personal information, because then that gets back to the notification, how that would work. You know, part of the thing would be if the proposal that we're making is if the entity has a website, then that website, the manual needs to be placed and updated. Well, the manual needs to be placed on the website and updated as and when necessary. And it's crucial that the name of the information officer is up to date. I think with a lot of the manuals that are there, they'll have an information officer and you find that person left the body some period before. I'm just not sure about this thing of the informing the, it's not the notification, but informing the regulator that you're processing information, what the difference is between what we've got ready and how that would work. Maybe you could just elaborate on that.
Mr. Chair, I think that what I propose is that the base information, the information around the entity itself and what they are processing, first of all, I would suggest that can now fairly easily be done simply by that party updating the information on a website which is controlled by the regulator. And that is the notification element for consumers out there and for any party that might be dealing with the process of that information. So from that perspective, there may well be manuals, and I would suggest that the issue of the retention of those manuals is no longer a part of the regulator at all. Because the notification to the parties, if they want to see a manual, they can actually ask the organization for that manual. So that's one aspect that I foresee can be dealt with and streamlined to a large extent. Because I've always wondered what the actual purpose was of the manuals going to the Law Reform Commission. If you ask for a manual, Human Rights Law Reform Commission, Human Rights Commission, I beg your pardon, if you ask for a maybe they should have investment as well, John. But if you ask for something from the Human Rights Commission, I can assure you, you will not receive it. You will not find that manual. They will not be able to give it to you. And I know that from experience. But the question of the manual, that should remain with the organization that is processing. It's a notification which is important to allow the consumer to actually know who they're dealing with. Coming more to the question of, I'm not suggesting that any processing of personal information, that there's got to be notification. I'm suggesting that where there is the processing of sensitive information, and the EU have a provision in Article 33 of the regulation, which I know is not yet enforced, but it does give us an informed view of what they regard as what they would regard necessary for an impact assessment for being able to say, if we are processing this type of information, what are the measures that we need to secure that information correctly? So there is some guidance that we can take for what is set out in that regard. I would also include in that category any information that is contemplated would be transferred across borders. So that should be notified as well, and that notification can also form part of the general notification to the public. But the notification is important to the regulator, to allow the regulator to determine the prior authorization. So, as I said, that's the distinction. I'm hoping that I'm answering the Honourable Jeffrey and what's clarifying the point there. That's the distinction that I see, and I believe that will alleviate the red tape that there has been, and may I say some very opportunistic profiteering by people out there hiding these manuals. And I think that it will also get us in a position that an information officer, an information officer is made responsible for this, and that there is a liability, a personal liability on that information officer for not ensuring that information is properly dealt with and that the regulator is properly notified and that consumers are properly notified. I think that we will see a far more serious attempt by business at actually dealing with information properly as opposed to what we've seen with PIA at this stage, where it's just been an administrative compliance. The manual was made to be the be-all and end-all of PIA at the end of the day. As long as you've done the manual, you didn't have to do anything else. And that is where this has failed to a large degree.
I think I would just like to comment on the position of the EU as set out in the new regulation now. I think the position previously was that there was a notification requirement, and that has been replaced now by something else, the documentation that's been dealt with in Article 28, together with the assessment, the impact assessment, and then the prior authorization. They didn't really previously put so much emphasis on the assessment, but this is almost you need documentation that you have to keep that at your own stage of business, and it must be available on request to the supervisory authority. Then in certain instances which they actually refer to, you need to have an impact assessment. The impact assessment is not a prior authorization in the sense that you cannot process information if you while waiting for the impact assessment. And then the prior authorization, as we had in our bill as well. Now, the idea is have been to move away from the notification, and I don't know if I understand Mr. Heinz correctly, he would actually still would like notification, but just using the new technologies, which would certainly improve the situation. But I don't think that is what they are actually dealing with in the EU now. They have actually done away with the notification completely and not only improved the technology. What we had in our goal, we doing away with notification, but we also do have impact assessments to deal with in clause 94. And although we have not stipulated the instances in which the assessment should be done, it is more it can be done at the request of the responsible party, or otherwise the regulator can at his own initiative do it when he feels it is necessary. And we may perhaps have a look when we come to that section to maybe align it with Article 33 if necessary. The instances where they feel that impact assessment is necessary is, for instance, where profiling is done with special information, with something like video surveillance and large-scale filing systems, which is quite helpful. But I don't think it really differs much from our 94 that we already had. So we do have the same sort of idea. If we now change our notification requirement into what they refer to as documentation in Article 38, we will be more or less in line then with what the new regulation is suggesting. I think the only question is really if we would still like to retain notification, but just with the new technologies assisting us, or whether we can do away with it completely. That is, as I see, the question. The other instances we have, yes, and then the question of the information officer, that previously it wasn't obligatory to have an information officer. It is now, and they have quite a lot of, they give them quite a lot of functions, whereas our information has been obligatory from the start, but we have just set the functions, we set out the functions, and I think we received submissions from IT government to extend that, but I think the committee decided that it would just add E, which says the responsibilities may be as described, so that it can be extended in the information for them. But our information officers' duties are not as extensive as the ones in the UK, and we thought that would be a natural progression as the competence and the technical know-how increases in our country. Maybe that could, at the moment, it is more or less a link between the regulator and the company, more than having specific responsibilities to actually do some of the or perform some of the functions that the regulator has to perform. So those are the information officer, the documentation, assessments, and prior authorization. They all actually together, but I think our role is more or less in line with what it is, except for the information officer with less responsibilities, and the assessments that are being done more at discretion of the regulator than in specific instances that have been referred to here.
Yeah, my understanding of Mr. Hank's suggestion is that the notification is only around special categories under 62, and that the main gist of what the suggestion is new is that that information is made available to the public, and that would, I think, either it would be on persons applying for prior authorization to process the special information, or, which I think would be easier, that the regulator must put such information on its website. But that's the gist of the proposal. I see him nodding his head. So it would then still be an issue of prior authorization, notification plus A goes. The provisions of 58 get put into the prior provisions on the manual. That maybe should be up the provisions on the information officer a bit in terms of a responsibility to, still keep the as described aspect because I think they can be broadened, but there's now a responsibility on the information officer to, I can't remember who had the responsibility before, but compile the manual, make sure it is up to date, and make it available. I see from the EU side data saying make the documents available to the supervisory authority, but because our manuals are meant to be available to the public, I think the issue is they should be available to members of the public, but obviously cover the enterprise concern, the businesses, the government body, whatever, the member of the public, if they want to take away a copy of the manual, they must pay for the photocopy cost, the copying cost. So basically that, and then ensure that the manual is updated and placed on the website if they have a website. I mean, most of the big companies would, maybe you'll find a reduction in websites, but they're not. And ensuring that it is updated. So those kinds of provisions. And then from Mr. Hayes' point, there's an additional point under 62 or following 62 that the regulator must provide these websites. I don't think it needs to be in the application or anything like that, the detail of these requests.
That sounds good. May I ask that we hear Mr. Peter Hill, and I saw Mr. Hank and Dr. Cronier raising their hands, although I think what the Honourable Jeffrey has just said pretty much wraps where we want to go. But if any of the three experts, no, but this is the time to tell us if there's a problem there.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. There's one chairperson this morning. You still as a member of the technical committee, I assume?
The call was coming in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the fundamental difference in the changes with the EU regulation now is that the obligation to notify the regulator has changed to the obligation of the information officer to actually maintain that same information. And what to me is fundamental in this whole legislation is the actual role of the information officer, because that's the person who will make or break an organization's success in adhering to this legislation. What we see in practice is that many of the information officers do not understand the requirements that are placed on them, and make very little effort then to deal with the issues, which puts the data subject in position should they ever inquire of never being able to get success. And so there needs to be some burden on some party to actually fulfill this. Now, it's not going to be the responsible party, because they're the ones who are trying to avoid this disclosure in the first place, or avoid engagement. So they can very easily bag out this process by making it a lengthy process to supply the information, where we want it to be the obligation of the information officer, a competent person who's actually going to need to ensure the information is up to date and readily available for anybody who makes an inquiry. And I think that's the fundamental difference in EU, is that they've moved the burden from the regulator having to maintain that information to the information officer, and they're therefore relying on the information officer. And not every organization will need to have a formally appointed information officer, an appointed CEO, but the responsibility must be with somebody to make sure that the information is readily available so that is subject to feels a need and find that information within a very short period of time. Otherwise, it's not going to bother. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair, very briefly, just an assignment on what the Honourable Jeffrey has put forward in summarising what I said, is that I think that it should be not necessarily an obligation, but that parties should be entitled to state their information or notify the regulator should they so choose, even where they are not necessarily requesting prior authorisation for the processing of special information. The reason that I say that is that there is very definitely a trend in particularly in Europe but around the world that the privacy or the observance of privacy and compliance with privacy regulation is becoming a competitive advantage for commercial companies. Therefore, having the ability for a company to actually take the information and make the statements that they are complying with the obligation may in itself start creating some type of through the commercial process that will apply some type of participation, encouragement is a word, to companies actually complying and having their names on that register.
Thank you, Chair. I see something that has been taken up earlier in some of the footnotes, if we look at section 17. And I see already it made some distinction between, you know, what should be going to the regulator and what the data that it should be aware of. Because actually, the proposal that we currently have is more or less already what section 18 is trying to fulfill. This section 18 are your notices that you have to provide to a data subject in any case. They're going to make that data subject aware. I think that the distinction must be made, why is there then a need to notify the regulator? There's definitely a clear distinction between the two. I understand where it comes to special categories of personal information, but I also concur to a certain extent with Mr. Ayington and Mr. Hill, pertaining to the need that we need to draw this responsibility clearly under the information officer, and whether we do it in terms of section 55 or whether we do it as was proposed, and I think they're under section 55 subparagraph E, where we say as may be prescribed, if that did not maybe be included then in that instance. So it could be a prescription at a later stage, but I fully concur with Honourable Jeffries and Smith in terms of the paper load that we have currently, and I also don't foresee the need for that. But if we look at the provision of section 17.2 as it stands right now, they already make provision for that section 14.51 manuals. So if a regulator complies, or I mean if a responsible party complies with that, they're already covered in terms of that. Thank you.
Alright, good help.
Yes. It's an appropriate time, Mr. Gray. It's fresh copy. Fresh copy. Not because the wheels of justice. He wasn't referring to you. No, he wasn't referring to you. It sounded like it. That's why I pulled my face. Well.
And what you get now is
Which reminds me.